Hey, it's not my fault. Well, it is my fault, but it's not my fault. So the bad news is that this is part three in the series about the book Marissa Meyer and the fight to save Yahoo. The bad news is that there's going to be a fourth part. There's no way I'm going to get to all my notes. I had not realized how much stuff I still have here that I want to talk about. You can scream and shout with all your might. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and motherfucking moan. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. Yes, you can shove your opinions right up your ass so Obama's cock has something to keep it company. My timing was a little off on that one. Every once in a while I'm not perfect, but it doesn't matter because I'm right, you're wrong, fuck you. Bang. There it is. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. Alright, there's a couple other things you need to know. You need to know that I am the great one himself, founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, 10 motherfucking years of podcasting. Yes, indeed. And this right here is stating the obvious, the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect that homes in and destroys stupid motherfuckers all around the world. Everywhere there's a statist. I got a freaking nuclear-tipped, statist-seeking cruise missile, homes in on them and blows them the fuck up. And if there are survivors, well, we have to mow them down. It's a lot going on. I recorded an episode of Anarchy Moment this morning, but I'm not going to publish it because it was not as solid as I wanted it to be. I went for a walk this morning, had a number of revelations, and it was pretty interesting. I'm going to get all of this. I'm thinking I might even write this out as, you know, whatever, an essay, a white paper, whatever you want to call it. I might just write this down. I know, incredible. That's why I do the podcast, is because I didn't want to write things down. I don't have to think that much and correct grammar and shit, but I might do it. Alright, anyway, I am the great one himself in the control room over there, lovely and adorable Randy. Today is the 16th of July, 2015. We're talking about this book right here, Marissa Meyer and the Fight to Save Yahoo by Nicholas Carlson. And again, read the book. It's a good book. You need to read this, especially if you are going to end up working in a cubicle someday in your life, because you want to find out what your life is like. What your life is going to be like, I should say. Now, I ended the previous episode talking about the maternity and paternity benefits. I just want to throw a little emphasis on something there. Because, you know, I made the assertion that when the company gives out 16 weeks of paid maternity leave to mothers, now I pointed out that you have to cover this person's slack while they're gone, and the money used to pay you for that has to come out of what might otherwise be your money. Because remember, corporations do not have money. And this is really hard to understand. Corporations aren't people. Corporations don't have money. When corporations have to spend money on something, that money has to come from someplace. The places it can come from, well, it can come from the profits that go to the shareholders. It can go to the bonuses that go to the CEOs. It can come from the money that could be used to pay you, or it can come from the people who purchase the products and services of the corporation in the form of raising the prices. And that's it. The corporation doesn't have some magical pot of money. So some people say, well, let's raise taxes on corporations. Well, you can't really raise taxes on corporations. The money comes from one of those four places. Now, the shareholders aren't going to allow their profit to be cut into. They're there to make money. Their profit starts getting cut. That's when they oust the CEO. And if you read this book has all these incidences of the CEOs of Yahoo being ousted by the shareholders. And I'm not some expert on how corporations work. But yet, apparently, you know, there are ways that shareholders can get CEOs ousted via their influence on the board and all this other stuff. All right, so the point is the shareholders aren't going to be like, oh yeah, we'll take a smaller profit so that women can take 16 weeks off with pay to have babies. So that's not going to happen. Okay, so then you got CEOs. Well, is a CEO going to take a pay cut so that women can is Marissa Meyer going to reduce her pay and her benefit packages so that pregnant women can get 16 weeks off to have children? Well, no, she isn't. Okay, so all that leaves is either raising the prices for the customers, and I'm not really sure what the hell Yahoo specifically does or who it sells to, because this is one of those things. I actually have this in the notes to talk about it later. Might as well talk about it now. I don't know. What is the point of Yahoo? Because I went to yahoo.com. I don't really know. And I think this is one of the, well, not just I, other people. It's in the book. They talk about this. One of the reasons Yahoo could be, I don't know what status they're at right now, floundering is that, what the fuck is Yahoo? Right, if I say to you Google, you know what Google is. If I say to you Facebook, you know what Facebook is. Pinterest, you know what Pinterest is. You know what each of those things does. You have an idea of why you would go there. I have no idea what Yahoo is. I don't know what Yahoo does. Why would I go to yahoo.com? I went to yahoo.com and I saw a bunch of links to stuff, but it's like, all right, I don't know why, right? What pulls me here? I don't know. So anyhow, Yahoo is going to pay these women to take 16 weeks off and have babies. Okay. So we're down to the money to pay them for the time they're not there either comes from money that could go to the employees, or it means they have to raise their advertising rates or something like that. They have to pass it on to the consumers, to the clients, to the customers. Now, the thing for you to remember is you're saying, well, yeah, fuck it, pass that on to the customers. Well, remember, every other corporation out there is also handing out benefits and giving people paid time off and paying taxes and all this other stuff. And so they have the very same dilemma. Whether it's Apple, whether it's IBM, whether it's Kraft, whether it's whoever, IKEA, whatever. They all have this same thing. Okay, they're not going to cut into what the shareholders make. Well, they're not going to cut into what the CEO makes. So they're either going to take money that could go to the employees, or they're going to raise their prices. Well, when they raise their prices, that since you are a customer of all these corporations, those price increases end up being passed on to you. So if you work for a corporation, not only are you, in a sense, losing out on money that could be yours because the corporation has to spend it on things other than paying you, you're also losing money because prices for things you buy, services you had purchased, etc., the prices for those are going up because those corporations also have to pay for maternity leave and diversity training and income taxes and all this other shit. The world is interconnected. That which happens to one corporation affects other people. And then, of course, as somebody else pointed out, I can't remember who the fuck I first encountered this from. It might have been Aaron Clary, just because there's like a 60% chance that anything I say was something I might have read from Aaron Clary at some point. But somebody pointed out that you've got all these people out here and they have these retirement plans, right? The IRAs. And your IRA is invested in the stock market. Well, what is the stock market? The stock market is essentially the profit or loss of a bunch of corporations. And for your IRA to go up in value, that means the corporations have to go up in value. Yet, if the corporations are being hit with all of these taxes, regulations, diversity training, yada, 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 all of this stuff that pushes their profits down, well, that means your IRA goes down in value, and that means that your retirement package goes down in value. And so every time you dumbasses are out there trying to make more laws and more regulations and more taxes on the corporations, you're fucking yourself three ways to Sunday. If you work for a corporation, you're fucking yourself by reducing the amount of money you could be paid. If you buy these services or products manufactured, created by a corporation, and you do, then you're increasing the amount of money you're having to pay for those products or services. And if you have any money invested in the stock market, directly, indirectly, IRA, 16K, 1493 hike, whatever the fuck it may be, you're hurting your retirement package by, because anything you do that keeps the corporate profits down is going to keep the value of your investments and your retirement package down. Just a little something for y'all to think about, y'all. Hang on 1 second, I gotta push a button. Okay, button has been pushed. Let's get back to the book. And, oh, what the hell? All right. That was not me talking about Marissa Mayer. I still keep mispronouncing her fucking name, apparently. God, I'm retarded. Remember, English is my first language. I still haven't mastered it. Whoa! And I'm falling over sideways because I'm sitting on the bouncy ball. Marissa Mayer and the Fight to Save Yahoo. Let's talk about the book. Let's get back to the fucking book. Yeah, I got a lot to go yet. Page 286. Dun, dun, dun. Another nasty surprise for Mayer came in late April 2013. For weeks, Yahoo Media boss Mickey Rosen and head of video Erin McPherson tried to convince Mayer that she absolutely had to come to their big event in New York at the end of the month. It was Yahoo's Newsfront, an event where, like TV networks did during their upfronts, Yahoo would show off its video programming for the year ahead to a large audience of ad agency buyers. Sounds hideous. Mayer took a little persuading. She was busy working on fixing Yahoo products like Mail and Flickr. It wasn't clear she knew what an upfront was. Finally, though, she agreed to come. But on April 29th, when Mayer showed up at the Best Buy Theater near Times Square. Corporations have theaters now? I mean, like, cinemas? This isn't a... I'm assuming this is not a theater like a stage theater. It's a theater like a cinema. It'd be nice if we could call cinemas cinemas instead of theaters. But anyway... God, just corporations, which aren't people, by the way, own everything, which is odd, because, anyway, never mind. At the Best Buy Theater near Times Square, Rosen and McPherson wondered if they had made a mistake asking her to come. This was a glitzy event. Rosen was in a cocktail dress. McPherson wore a tight black dress and high heels. Mayer, who would usually don a designer dress for any occasion that might call for it, looked totally out of place. She was dressed modestly in black slacks, a black top, and a purple and white cardigan. Her look was office casual. Yes. So what does it matter what they look like? Oh, that's right, because we're supposed to judge people based on the content of their character, not what they look like. So let's give the CEO of the corporation a hard time because of what she's wearing. Yeah, you women have come a long way, haven't you? Anyway, who cares? I don't care. She showed up. She was there, right? As long as she wasn't wearing, like, maybe... Okay, if she just showed up in Daisy Dukes and flip-flops, all right, maybe we could say, yeah, you could have classed it up a little. But, I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, she showed up. Shut the fuck up, bitches. Anyway, the show kicked off and things got worse. Upfronts and new fronts are supposed to be funny and fast-paced. But Mayer went on stage and read corporate speak from a prompter, putting the audience halfway to sleep. Her magnetic personality. Yeah, Randy, where's my Randy, where the fuck did I put my pen? I found one. Never mind. Fortunately for the attendant ad buyers, Rosen and McPherson had booked enough talent to wake everyone up again. Ed Helms from The Office and The Hangover and actor John Stamos from Full House went on stage and got laughs. Oh boy. Is this... See, and like, again, if you're going to work for a corporation, this is the kind of stuff your corporation's going to spend money on. Professional wrestler Big Show from the WWE showed up. The folk rock band The Lumineers played. It was the rarest of events. Marissa Mayer had been caught unprepared. When Mayer joined Yahoo, Rosen explained to her that Yahoo's media business was humongous and that it had 3,000 employees and revenues of $1.5 billion. Which is interesting considering I've never heard of Yahoo's media empire. Not that what I'm aware of really matters, because as we all know, I'm out of touch with pop culture completely. But still, that was a big chunk of Yahoo's total annual revenues of roughly $5 billion. If Mayer was going to get Yahoo's revenues going before her 24th month countdown was up, Yahoo's media business would have to play a big part. But it wasn't until that night that it seemed to sink in for Mayer how massive Yahoo's media business actually was, and how glamorous, too. Oh, it's so glamorous. Oh, it's glamorous. All right. After the embarrassment of the news front, Mayer dug into Yahoo's media business during the summer and fall of 2013. She insisted that going forward, any programming choices made by McPherson had to be approved by her first. She began sitting in on the meetings, delaying their start because of her busy schedule. Here, whoa! I'm falling over backwards. Whew, good thing we do not do video here. That would have been hilarious. What the hell was I about to say before I almost fell off the bouncy ball? Oh, yeah. This is why you don't allow CEOs who don't know anything about what the fuck they're doing to make decisions. Because, as we're about to see, now that Mayer has discovered this $1.5 billion part of her company, which apparently she didn't know about before, she's going to go in and attempt to micromanage it. I wonder what's going to happen. Ooh, well, let's find out, shall we? In general, Mayer wanted Yahoo's media brands to move upward. One morning, while visiting New York, Mayer had breakfast with Ann Wintour, the bob-haired wearer of huge sunglasses who edits Vogue. Mayer told Wintour she could use her help. Mayer asked her if there were any people Wintour could send to Yahoo. Maybe Yahoo could run some Vogue content. Marissa, said Wintour, where would it go? Marissa told Wintour that Yahoo had a site for women called Yahoo Shine. Wintour leaned over Shine. Now, you have a site for women. It's called Yahoo Shine. That's kind of like naming your sneakers that are marketed towards women Incubus. Google it. Anyway, I don't get it. Yahoo Shine. What the fuck does that have to do with women? I don't get it. Maybe it's because I'm not a chick. I don't know. Wintour leaned over the breakfast table and grabbed Mayer's arm. She said, quote, I know. I've seen it. It's dreadful. Mayer could have brought up that Shine was actually very popular. Webmetrics from SimilarWeb reported that Shine saw nearly 75 million visits per month, about 20 times more than Vogue.com. I would have rubbed that in, but that's just me. I'm an asshole. She could have mentioned that Shine, as lowbrow as it might have been, appeared to someone like Wintour, brought in $45 million per year for Yahoo. Less than Vogue's print business for sure, but likely higher than its digital revenues. But Mayer said neither of those things. Instead, she felt like crawling under the table. Here was the queen of taste telling her Yahoo's fashion site was awful. Mayer was determined to reshape Yahoo's media brands into ones that the Ann Wintours of the world would appreciate. She began pushing for McPherson to follow Netflix's lead and commission full-length shows like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. McPherson explained to Mayer that those shows were extremely expensive to make, and that networks like Netflix and HBO could make them only because they generated their revenues through subscriptions, a much more predictable and less hit-dependent source of cash than Yahoo's advertising business. McPherson argued that Yahoo should do what Google was doing with YouTube and commission short-form video from startup production companies in Hollywood. Over the summer, Mayer greenlighted a plan for Yahoo to hire one of her mother's favorite TV stars. This is... the CEO of Yahoo and the savior. We're going to hire this person because my mommy likes her. There's some fucking data-driven decision-making. One of her mother's favorite TV stars, someone who is surely Wintour-approved, Katie Couric, the former anchor of CBS News and former co-host of The Today Show. In April 2013, Couric was hosting a failing daytime talk show. Yahoo invited her to interview Mayer on stage at an event for Yahoo clients in the Turks and Caicos, something, I don't know, whatever. After, Couric told Mayer she wanted to do something big with Yahoo. Well, yes, because she's failing and she needs to be bailed out. Meanwhile, Marissa Mayer is failing and she needs to be bailed out. So let's get two people who are failing and need to be bailed out, and let's have them combine forces, because that's going to work, right?
Right.
Couric had been working on and off with Yahoo since 2010 when Ross Levinson took her and her former producer Jeff Zucker out for lunch. Levinson thought Couric could do a daily show for Yahoo in which she would go over trending search queries. A TV show, I mean a video, we call it a TV show, a video show each day about what people are typing into search engines. Is this really the sort of thing that you people would watch? It probably is. Never underestimate the stupidity of the American public, or the public of the non-Americas, who knows. Couric could do a daily show for Yahoo in which she would go over trending search queries. He wanted to pay her a couple of million dollars and stick the video on Yahoo's front page. The deal never came together, but in 2012, Couric did launch a video series on Yahoo called Katie's Take. She interviewed experts on topics such as health and parenting. But it's called Katie's Take. That implies to me it's her opinion, not the experts' opinions. Despite Couric's supposed star power, yeah, supposed would be the key word in that sentence, Yahoo users didn't click on the videos, no matter how Yahoo's editors positioned them on the page. Yahoo users preferred stories about celebrities. Well, yes, because first of all, when you think Yahoo user, I don't know about you, but I think white trash. And yeah, I mean, if your metrics are showing that your users want to read about Kim Kardashian's ass, well, throwing a bunch of money at Katie Couric and sticking her videos on the internet is not going to change what people want to see. Right? If people want to read stories at their third grade reading level about Kim Kardashian's ass, that's what you're going to have to give them if you want those people to keep coming back to your site and doing clicking on the ads or looking at the ads or whatever that keeps selling the ads. This is a problem with making your money via advertising. Not that making money via advertising is evil or something, but the point is, if you make money with advertising, then you have to provide content, for lack of a better word. I don't like the word content, but we're talking about the internet. You have to provide some kind of crappy content that is formulated to get people to look at it so they see the advertisements, so you make money with advertisements. That is actually exactly what content is, which is why I don't like using the word content. Well, I'm creating content, right? Creating content says you are creating this content, words, pictures, videos, whatever, for a specific purpose, to serve as clickbait to get people to come here so that the advertisements get seen, so that the metrics show up on the advertisements, so that the advertisers give you money for it. And if your fucking clickbait audience wants stories about Kim Kardashian, you can't give them Katie Couric. You have to give them Kim Kardashian. Mayer ignored those metrics and in mid-2013 made Couric Yahoo's global anchor, giving her a deal worth $5 million per year. Now, how many 16-week maternity leave periods could that $5 million have paid for? Again, when it's time for the company to hand out the diversity training and the maternity leave and the retirement benefits and pay their income taxes and all this other shit, do you think that's going to come out of Katie Couric's salary? No. No, it's not. Mayer's decision-making around media was very different than what many of her executives expected from her. They had heard stories about UI reviews where Mayer would test different shades of blue and pick one based on data. But when it came to media, Mayer seemed to make her decisions based on instincts, a deeply personal sense of what made for good content. She grew up sneaking into the living room to watch Saturday Night Live and could recite sketches during meetings. So Yahoo overpaid for the SNL archives. Mayer liked Town and Country better than Shine, so she started to starve Shine of budget, even though Shine was a commercial success, and Town and Country content performed poorly on Yahoo's home page. Even though actress Gwyneth Paltrow had a best-selling cookbook, Mayer thought it was a horrible idea to hire her to be a contributing editor to Yahoo Food. Why? Quote, "She didn't even go to college." Unquote. A few of Mayer's media executives believes that she did not understand Yahoo's Middle America Walmart-esque brand, that it was always going to be something Anna Wintour did not like, but that was okay because Vogue's revenues were under $500 million and Yahoo's were more than $5 billion. And this is, we see what happens when you have a CEO who starts making decisions based on her personal taste. And this is natural. I've talked about this before with the buffet example, right? All of us think that everyone else thinks and likes what we think and like. And you have to have, my favorite thing to talk about, self-awareness. You have to have self-awareness to allow you to recognize that other people are different. So why is it that Mayer can be so anal retentive about the colors used on a website and get all this data, but then when it comes to the culture stuff, it's just about, well, this is what I like, this is what my mom likes, fuck the data. Well, I have a theory, at least one. I always have some kind of theory. One theory is that just Mayer, like any other elite, would love to take her view of the world and shove it off on everyone else. I mean, this is what the entertainment industry does, essentially. So they take their worldview and they stuff it down other people's throats. And Mayer, just because she is the messiah of Yahoo, at least currently until she gets fired, she's not immune from this. She likes Katie Couric, or actually her mom likes Katie Couric. She wants everybody else to like Katie Couric, right? Right. Page 294. Let me move on. Last paragraph that you know, you got it. Oh yeah, here's a great story of life in the corporate world. Again, if you're going to work in a cubicle, listen to this, because this is your future. American Committee Yahoo told Doors, Team Cave Guy, iOS Line, blah, blah, blah. Everyone who knew anything, we're kind of jumping in the middle of the story, but just trust me, you'll get the gist of it. Everyone who knew anything about the behind-the-scenes story of the app believed that Doer was the one who shepherded the product into existence, pulling people from their day jobs and convincing them their idea was a big one. Khan was Doer's boss, sure, but Khan only oversaw the last bit of the product's development. And yet, there was Khan on stage at WWDC acting like it was all his idea. Meanwhile, Doer didn't even find out Yahoo won the award until Mayer wrote a blog post about it. That made people mad. Why, yes, you see, when your boss takes credit for your achievements, which is going to happen to you if you have a job, period, but is much more likely to happen to you if you have a job at a corporation. Hold on. I just got distracted because this is important. No, it's just it's just Aaron Clary retweeting one of my tweets. Sorry, that was worth interrupting the show for. This made people mad. Yes. Yes, it does. Again, when your boss steals your thunder, it's going to make you mad. Mayer's plan to get Yahoo ready for when Albania's air cover expired in 2014, you've got to read the book to understand that whole story, depended on the company building mobile apps users loved. This made Khan one of the most important people in the company. But the fact was, by the summer of 2013, Khan was regularly making talented people who worked for him angry, and some of them were leaving the company because of it. Some of Khan's behavior was straight from a Dilbert cartoon. Before product reviews with Mayer, he would come to the product team a half hour early and ask what everyone was going to say to her. Then, during the meeting with Mayer, he'd bring up their points as if they were his own. Welcome to corporate America. Aren't you glad you're going to get a cubicle job? Khan was a screamer, too. One day, Khan was in a review with Mayer and three people from his team, a product manager and two of the staffers. After the meeting was over and Mayer left, Khan and the remaining three began talking about scheduling. Khan started getting upset. He asked the two junior people to leave him alone with the product manager. After they did, Khan started shouting. The project manager said, "I don't understand why you're screaming at me." "You don't get it," said Khan. "These people are not working fast enough. They are not working hard enough." Well, maybe you should be less of a douchebag and they'd put some more effort into it. No one likes getting screamed at, so the product manager accelerated the project. Then, after the After the product launched, his team had to go back and fix a bunch of foundational tech issues caused by rushing. In general, Khan lacked the interpersonal negotiation skills, the art of sandwiching a piece of criticism between two encouraging compliments. People recognized that Khan had every right to be rude and that Yahoo wasn't supposed to feel like kindergarten all the time. They even recognized that Yahoo needed someone compulsive and hard-driven to grow its mobile organization from less than 100 people to more than 500 in under 12 months. But as much as people could admit that Khan was effective in the big picture, it didn't mean they liked working for him. They started gossiping about him, telling stories about his brown nosing, and sharing a salacious New York Magazine story about how his first marriage fell apart. Talented people from his organization started leaving Yahoo, including the real executive behind the app that made Johnny Ive so jealous of Marissa Meyer, Kevin Duer. Yeah, when you get a corporate job, that's going to be your future. That's the kind of shit that goes on. Part of that, too, of course, is the concept of promoting people to the point of incompetency. This also happens. You may think this is only in Dilbert, but it's true. I've been there, done it, seen it. In any kind of organization, people get promoted and they do a good job. As they get promoted again, you do a good job, you get promoted again. The promotions keep happening until you get a job you're not capable of doing that well and you start failing at it, and then people are like, well, shit, we're not going to promote him. But the problem is, they never demote these people back to the previous job they had, where they were at least competent at it. Instead, they leave the person at the job where the person has become incompetent. And that's why, as you go up the ranks at a company, you encounter more and more of this kind of incompetence. What do I got here? 298. The hell am I talking about? First full paragraph, 298. Whatever its cause, Mayer's coldness was compounded by another two factors. One was that she was a micromanager in the extreme. During her first year, managers across the company would complain during FYIs that they had lost out on key hires because Yahoo's hiring process was too slow. The reason? For a time, Mayer insisted on personally approving every hire Yahoo made. At one executive meeting, Mayer spent as much time on Yahoo's parking policies as she did strategizing over the billions of dollars Yahoo would net from its final sale of Albana stock. The other factor compounding Mayer's coldness was that she had an awful habit of being late all the time. Ah, yes. All right, now we're going to talk about being late. Every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. California time, Mayer's staff would gather for a three-hour meeting with the boss. Mayer demanded all of her staff across the world join the call, so executives from New York, where it was 6 p.m., and Europe, where it was 11 p.m. or later, would dial in. Inevitably, Mayer would show up at least 45 minutes late. Some calls started so late that Yahoo's executives in Europe didn't hang up until after 3 a.m. their time. Mayer had approximately 24 people reporting to her during her first year at Yahoo. In theory, she was keeping up with each of them in regularly scheduled weekly meetings. In practice, she would go weeks without talking to the people because she was so busy. For a while, each of the 24 people thought that Mayer was just picking on them individually. The people who had been at Yahoo before Mayer joined assumed this meant she was going to fire them soon. The people Mayer had hired into the company, including HR boss Jackie Reese and CMO Kathy Savitt, were even more puzzled. Why had they been hired only to be ignored? But then, during one of those long waiting periods after 3 p.m. on a Monday, a conversation unfurled that revealed all. Making small talk, one executive said to another, quote, "Did she cancel one of your one-on-ones again?" unquote. A third jumped in. "Oh my God, she does that to you too?" It turned out that everyone in the room and on the call had been canceled on by Mayer frequently. Now, some of you out there may be saying, what's the big deal? She's so busy. Yeah, she's so busy. She can't let go. She can't fucking delegate, but she's so busy, but she's going to fuck up other people's lives. Here's why, and again, we're not talking about being late 10, 15 minutes. This is a habitual thing that Mayer has shown throughout this book, is being late and not giving a fuck. Right now, you and I are both dying. You and I have a limited amount of time to live on the fucking planet Earth. And when some dumb bitch like this is 45 minutes late all the time, an hour late, 2 hours late, 3 hours late. She's cutting in to the lifetime of other people. She is cutting in to the limited amount of time these people have to live. This is why I hate it when people, I have jobs, unfortunately. There are jobs I do. I work places and paid by the hour. And these fucking people, I despise them when they say things like, well, we're not doing anything, but we're on the clock. Yeah, well, you're a fucking loser and you don't have anything else to do with your life. Yeah, we're on the clock, but we're not doing anything. I could be somewhere else doing something that's valuable. And of course, my other favorite is, well, yeah, we gotta do this again, but it's job security. I don't need motherfucking job security, okay? I have a fucking life to live. I don't need to fucking do pointless shit or to redo things that were fucked up or to redo things that are fucked up over and over and over because nobody can fix the system, change the system, hire somebody who's competent, whatever the fucking excuse is. I don't need job security. I need to enjoy my fucking life. And all this clock, we're on the clock, we got job security. Shut the fuck up. You're wasting my life and I fucking hate you. Marissa Mayer sounds like she wasted a lot of people's lives. She deserves to be hated for that. And if you're the same way, so do you. Mayer was also consistently late to product reviews. The meeting would be scheduled for 2 p.m. and around 2:15, Mayer's assistant, Trish Crowley, would come in and say, really sorry, she's going to be late. We're not sure when she'll get here. Then it would be 3 p.m. and then 4 p.m., and then Crowley would come out and say the meeting was canceled. The standard joke was that if you had a review with Mayer, you should not expect to know when it was going to be and that it would change at the last minute. It was annoying for people who worked in Sunnyvale. It was brutal for remote teams in India and Europe. Sometimes the blow-offs anchored people to their core. When, in the fall of 2012, Mayer told the Yahoo Mail team that she wanted it to redo its colors at the very last minute, she told the executive in charge, Vivek Sharma, that she wanted to see early mock-ups the next morning. Sharma's team worked overnight. Mayer missed the meeting in the morning. The coldness and the lateness were a brutal combination. It left people who reported to Mayer feeling diminished. Would the demoralization of Mayer's direct reports slow Yahoo down in its race to blah, blah, blah? The real danger was that word of Marissa Mayer's managerial style would get out and make it harder for her to hire talented executives. And yeah, you know, again, that was me getting a drink of water. You didn't miss anything. You know, CEOs, I think in a perfect world, in addition to making less money, because they don't really do that much, they shouldn't be doing that much. CEOs should steer the ship in the right direction and then fucking delegate bullshit and not waste people's time. But if you're going to get a job in corporate America and if you're going to be a cubicle dweller, this is the kind of shit you're going to have to put up with. And remember, not everybody gets to be a top-level executive. Most of you, I think people go into the corporate world thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to be a vice president, I'm going to be a president, I'm going to be a CEO, whatever. There's only so many CEO slots out there. And if you're not the lead dog, the view never changes. And of course, a CEO can be fired by the board, who can be influenced by the shareholders. Ah, Cubicleville. It's beauty. All right, what's next? Page 301. Oh, I'm already there. Last full paragraph to uncaring place. Blah, blah, blah. This deep. Deeply embarrassing for Yahoo employees. By this we mean the Yahoo Mail collapsing and not working. It was deeply embarrassing for Yahoo employees. They began demanding answers from Mayer at FYI. Rank and file employees were becoming disenchanted with Mayer over other issues as well. There were reports that Yahoo was going to pay Katie Couric $6 million per year to be its global anchor. That seemed strange and out of touch, like a Terry Schmel move almost. Yahoo revenues weren't growing either. Yahoo reported quarterly revenues of $1.14 billion September 30th, down from $1.2 billion during the third quarter of the year before. Everyone inside the company was keenly aware of how much Henrique De Castro was being paid to solve that problem, $60 million or more. Yes, she hired somebody for $60 million worth of pay and benefits to solve their cash flow problem. Again, how many 16-week maternity leave sessions can you get out of $60 million? And hey, let's give Katie Couric another $1 million a year because she's doing such a fantastic job of essentially being ignored on the internet and not getting anybody to click on her videos. But you know what? Marissa Mayer's mommy likes Katie Couric. So yeah, that's worth $1 million a year, right? Meanwhile, inside Yahoo's product organization, there were murmurs that mobile boss Adam Kahn was such an unpleasant person to work for that the people behind Yahoo Weather had quit the company. With her Google pedigree, Marissa Mayer was supposed to have been some kind of search engine genius, and yet Yahoo kept losing share in that market. All of that was a sideshow, however, compared to the main source of angst and resentment for rank-and-file Yahoo employees that fall. What they had begun to hate about Marissa Mayer's regime was her awful employee rating system, the QPRs. In an effort to flush out some of Yahoo's poor performers and cut costs in the process, Mayer had rolled out a system where managers had to grade their employees on a fixed curve. Even on top-performing teams, someone always had to get a poor score. Poor and sometimes even average scores made it nearly impossible to transfer jobs, earn full bonuses, or get promotions. The system made employees feel like they were working against one another, not with each other. The whole thing made Yahoo feel like a cutthroat, uncaring place. And that's where we started talking about this book, was with her freaking employee evaluation plan, which, as I pointed out, is very similar to the one I had to deal with myself when I was a management puke over at CSU. And it's the one you are going to have to deal with when you get yourself a corporate job. When you land that cubicle job with your, you know, whatever, international communications diploma or journalism diploma or whatever it is you wasted money on getting your liberal arts degree, you're going to be put into a system that sounds just like this. And yes, there are going to be some very incompetent people at the top who are getting paid a lot of money, like $5 million a year to make videos nobody watches, or $60 million a year in order to increase the profits of a company, but not actually increasing the profits. There are going to be some really high-paid people up at the top who are really incompetent. And there's a chance you might be one of them, but statistically, the odds are against it. There's also going to be some very competent people at the top, the people who are actually making things work and doing things and keeping shit going, and they're probably paid a nice amount of money too. And you might be one of those people. It's possible. But the odds are going to be against it. And even if you're up there and you're doing things right and you're making a lot of money, you're going to have to deal with CEOs that can't show up on time. CEOs that make decisions based on what their mother likes. And you're just going to have to deal with the fact that you have incompetency all around you at your level, preventing you from being successful. But most likely, you're just going to be a cubicle dweller for the entire time that you're there. And when somebody else is gone on 16 weeks of maternity leave, you're going to be doing their work, unless, of course, they don't do anything, in which case you're not going to have anything to cover, but that's just going to illustrate the fact that this person is getting paid to do nothing. You're going to be carrying the burden. You're going to be getting reviewed by people who have to fit your review onto a bell curve. You're going to be putting up with all of this bullshit because that's what corporate America has become. That's why you should always be thinking about start your own business. Find a way that you can create value for other people directly, and you don't have to sit in a cubicle, and you don't have to put up with all this bullshit. Because other people are never going to care as much about you as you care about yourself. I know you've heard this before. You've heard this from me. You've heard this from other people. You've heard this from Aaron Cleary. I'm just talking about Aaron Cleary again. Buy his book, Worthless. Nobody gives a shit about you as much as you do. And all of this Messiah worship, whether it's the Messiah Hussein Obama, who's going to give you free birth control and Obamacare and food stamps and all this other shit, he doesn't give a fuck about you. Or whether it's the Messiah of Marissa Mayer, who's going to come to the company and be the CEO and be the savior and fix everything and make it all better. No. None of these people are going to save you. At some point in your life, if you want to stop being a loser, you've got to recognize you have to look out for yourself. This doesn't mean you're not interacting with other humans. This doesn't mean you can't have a job working for somebody else, because as I've said before, all jobs, even when you work for yourself, you're still working for other people. But you have to put yourself in a position where you can choose what you do with your time and money, where you can choose who you do business with and who you associate with. Being in a corporate environment, and of course being in a statist environment, take those choices away from you. You will associate with who you're told to associate with. You will spend your money on what you're told to spend your money on. And you will think only that which you are allowed to think. If your opinion doesn't match the opinion you're supposed to have, then we got something for you.